but it is only a bridge, one of many. Come along, Mariko-san. Walk beside me across this bridge. Beside me, please. Let us walk together. Then added in Latin, and believe that thou art carried, and that we go hand in hand into a new beginning. She stepped out of her palanquin and walked beside him until they reached the other side. There she got back into the curtained litter, and they went up the slight rise. Buntaro was waiting at the castle gate. Blackthorn remembered how he had prayed for a lightning bolt to come out of the sky. There's no problem with him, is there? He asked again as they came to the final landing. She shook her head. Torunaga said, ship very ready, Anjin-san? No mistake? No mistake, sire. Ship perfect. How many extra men? How many more want for ship? Torunaga glanced at Mariko. Please ask him how many extra crew he'll need to sail the ship properly. I want to be quite sure he understands what I want to know.
The Anjin-san says, to sail her, a minimum of 30 seamen and 20 gunners. His original crew was 107, including cooks and merchants. To sail and fight in these waters, the complement of 200 samurai would be enough.
And he believes the other men he needs could be hired in Nagasaki?
Yes, sire.
Torunaga said distastefully, I certainly wouldn't trust mercenaries.
Please excuse me. Do you wish me to translate that, sire?
What? Oh, no. Never mind that.
Torunaga got up, still pretending peevishness, and looked out of the windows at the rain. The whole city was obscured by the downpour.
Let it rain for months, he thought. All gods, make the rain last until New Year. When will Buntaro see my brother? Tell the Anjin-san I'll give him his vassals tomorrow. Today's terrible. This rain will go on all day. There's no point in getting soaked.
Yes, sire,
he heard her say, and smiled ironically to himself. Never in his whole life had weather prevented him from doing anything.
That should certainly convince her, or any other doubters, that I've changed permanently for the worse, he thought,
knowing he could not yet divert from his chosen course.
Tomorrow or the next day, what does it matter? Tell him when I'm ready, I'll send for him. Until then, he's to wait in the castle.
He heard her pass on the orders to the Anjin-san.
Yes, Lord Torunaga, I understand,
Blackthorn replied for himself.
But may I respectfully ask, possible go Nagasaki quick? Think important. So sorry. I'll decide that later,
Torunaga said brusquely, not making it easy for him. He motioned him to leave.
Goodbye, Anjin-san. I'll decide your future soon.
He saw that the man wanted to press the point, but politely didn't.
Good, he thought. At least he's learning some manners. Tell the Anjin-san there's no need for him to wait for you, Mariko-san. Goodbye, Anjin-san.
Mariko did as she was ordered. Torunaga turned back to contemplate the city and the cloudburst. He listened to the sound of the rain. The door closed behind the Anjin-san.
What was the quarrel about?
Torunaga asked, not looking at her.
Sire?
His ears, carefully tuned, had caught the slightest tremble in her voice.
Of course, between Buntaro and yourself. Or have you had another quarrel that concerns me?
He added with biting sarcasm, needing to precipitate the matter quickly.
With the Anjin-san, perhaps, or my Christian enemies, or the Tsuku-san?
No, sir. Please excuse me. It began, as always, like most quarrels, sire, between husband and wife. Really over nothing. Then suddenly, as always, all the past gets spewed up, and it infects the man and the woman if the mood's on them.
And the mood was on you?
Yes. Please excuse me. I provoked my husband unmercifully. It was my fault entirely. I regret, sire, in those times, so sorry, people say wild things.
Come on, hurry up. What wild things?
She was like a doe at bay. Her face was chalky. She knew that spies must have already whispered to him what was shouted in the quiet of their house. She told him everything that had been said, as best she could remember it. Then she added, "I believe my husband's words were spoken in wild rage, which I provoked. He's loyal. I know he's loyal. If anyone is to be punished, it's me, sire. I did provoke the madness."
Torunaga sat again on the cushion, his back ramrod, his face granite. "What did the Lady Genjiko say?"
"I haven't spoken to her, sire."
"But you intend to, or intended to, nay?"
"No, sire. With your permission, I intend to leave at once for Osaka."
"You will leave when I say, and not before, and treason is a foul beast wherever it's to be found."
She bowed under the whiplash of his tongue.
"Yes, sire. Please forgive me. The fault is mine."
He rang a small handbell. The door opened. Naga stood there.
"Yes, sire."
"Order the Lord Sudara here, with the Lady Genjiko, at once."
"Yes, sir."
Naga turned to go.
"Wait. Then summon my council, Yabu and all senior generals. They're to be here at midnight. And clear this floor. All guards. You come back with Sudara."
"Yes, sir."
White-faced, Naga closed the door after him. Torunaga heard men clattering down the stairs. He went to the door and opened it. The landing was clear. He slammed the door and bolted it. He picked up another bell and rang it. An inner door at the far end of the room opened. This door was hardly noticeable, so cleverly had it been melded with the woodwork. A middle-aged, heavy-set woman stood there. She wore a cowled Buddhist nun's habit.
"Yes, great lord."
"Cha, please, Chano-chan," he said.
The door closed. Torunaga's eyes went back to Mariko.
"So you think he's loyal?"
"I know it, sir. Please forgive me. It was my fault, not his,"
she said, desperate to please.
"I provoked him."
"Yes, you did that. Disgusting, terrible, unforgivable."
Torunaga took out a paper kerchief and wiped his brow.
"But fortunate," he said.
"Sir?"
"If you hadn't provoked him, perhaps I might never have learned of any treason. And if he'd said all that without provocation, there'd be only one course of action. As it is," he continued, "you give me an alternative."
"Sir?"
He did not answer. He was thinking,
"I wish Hiromatsu were here. Then there'd be at least one man I could trust completely." "What about you? What about your loyalty?"
"Please, sir, you must know you have that."
He did not reply. His eyes were unrelenting. The inner door opened, and Chano, the nun, came confidently into the room without knocking, a tray in her hands.
"Here you are, great lord. It was ready for you."
She knelt as a peasant. Her hands were rough like a peasant's, but her self-assurance was enormous and her inner contentment obvious.
"May Buddha bless you with his peace."
Then she turned to Mariko, bowed as a peasant would bow, and settled back comfortably.
"Perhaps you'd honour me by pouring, lady. You'll do it prettily, without spilling it, eh?"
Her eyes gleamed with private amusement.
"With pleasure, Oku-san,"
Mariko said, giving her the religious mother title, hiding her surprise. She had never seen Naga's mother before. She knew most of Torunaga's other official ladies, having seen them at official ceremonies. But she was on good terms only with Kiritsubo and Lady Sazuko.
Torunaga said, "Chano-chan, this is the Lady Toda Mariko Nobuntaro."
"Ah, so this. So sorry. I thought you were one of my great lord's honored ladies. Please excuse me, Lady Toda. May the blessings of Buddha be upon thee."
"Thank you,"
Mariko said. She offered the cup to Torunaga. He accepted it and sipped.
"Pour for Chano-san and yourself," he said.
"So sorry, Not for me, great lord, with your permission, but my back teeth are floating from so much char, and the bucket's a long way away for these old bones.
The exercise would do you good, Toranaga said, glad that he had sent for her when he returned to Edo.
Yes, great lord, you're right, as you always were.
Chano turned her genial attention again to Mariko.
So you're Lord Akechi Jinsai's daughter.
Mariko's cup hesitated in the air.
Yes, please excuse me. Oh, that's nothing to wish to be excused about, child.
Chano laughed kindly, and her stomach heaved up and down.
I didn't place you without your name. Please excuse me. But the last time I saw you was at your wedding. Oh? Oh, yes. I saw you at your wedding, but you didn't see me. I spied you from behind a screen. Yes, you and all the great ones, the dictator and Nakamura, the Taiko-to-be, and all the nobles. Oh, I was much too shy to mix in that company. But that was such a good time for me, the best of my life. That was the second year my great lord favoured me, and I was heavy with child, though still the peasant I've always been.
Her eyes crinkled, and she added,
You're very little different from those days, still one of Buddha's chosen. Ah, I wish that were true, Oka-san. It's true. Did you know you were one of Buddha's chosen? I'm not, Oka-san, much as I would like to be.
Toranaga said, She's Christian.
Ah, oh, Christian, what does that matter to a woman? Christian or Buddha, great lord? Not a lot sometimes, though some gods necessary to a woman.
Chano chuckled gleefully.
We women need a god, great lord, to help us deal with men, ne?
And we men need patience, godlike patience, to deal with women, ne?
The woman laughed, and it warmed the room, and for an instant lessened some of Mariko's foreboding.
Yes, great lord, Chano continued. And all because of a heavenly pavilion that has no future, little warmth, and a sufficiency of hell.
Toranaga grunted.
What do you say to that, Mariko-san?
The Lady Chano is wise beyond her youth,
Mariko said.
Ah, lady, you say pretty things to an old fool,
the nun told her.
I remember you so well. Your kimono was blue, with the loveliest pattern of cranes on it I've ever seen. In silver.
Her eyes went back to Toranaga.
Well, great lord, I just wanted to sit for a moment. Please excuse me now.
There's time yet. Stay where you are.
Yes, great lord, Chano said, ponderously getting to her feet. I would obey, as always, but nature calls. So please be kind to an old peasant. I'd hate to disgrace you. It's time to go. Everything's ready. There's food and sake when you wish it, great lord.
Thank you.
The door closed noiselessly behind her. Mariko waited until Toranaga's cup was empty, then she filled it again.
What are you thinking?
I was waiting, sire.
For what, Mariko-san?
Lord, I'm Hatamoto. I've never asked a favor before. I wish to ask a favor as a Hata...
I don't wish you to ask any favor as a Hatamoto, Toranaga said.
Then a lifetime wish.
I'm not a husband to grant that.
Sometimes a vassal may ask a liege.
Yes, sometimes, but not now. Now you will hold your tongue about any lifetime wish, or favor, or request, or whatever.
A lifetime wish was a favor that by ancient custom a wife might ask of her husband, or a son of a father, and occasionally a husband of a wife, without loss of face, on the condition that if the wish was granted, the person agreed never again to ask another favor in this life. By custom, no questions about the favor might be asked, nor was it ever to be mentioned again. There was a polite knock at the door.
"Unbolt it," Toranaga said.
She obeyed. Sudara entered, followed by his wife, the Lady Genjiko, and Naga.
"Naga-san, go down to the second landing below and prevent anyone from coming up without my orders."
Naga stalked off.
"Mariko-san, shut the door and sit down there."
Toranaga pointed at a spot slightly in front of him, facing the others.
"I've ordered you both here because there are private, urgent family matters to discuss."
Sudara's eyes involuntarily went to Mariko, then back to his father. The Lady Genjiko's did not waver.
Toranaga said roughly, "She's here, my son, for two reasons. The first is because I want her here, and the second because I want her here."
"Yes, father,"
Sudara replied, ashamed of his father's discourtesy to all of them.
"May I please ask why I have offended you?"
"Is there any reason why I should be offended?"
"No, sire, unless my zeal for your safety and my reluctance to allow you to depart this earth is cause for offense."
"What about treason? I hear you're daring to assume my place as leader of our clan."
Sudara's face blanched. So did the Lady Genjiko's.
"I have never done that in thought or word or deed. Neither has any member of my family or anyone in my presence."
"That is true, sire,"
Lady Genjiko said with equal strength.
Sudara was a proud, lean man with cold, narrow eyes and thin lips that never smiled. He was 24 years old, a fine general, and the second of Toranaga's five living sons. He adored his children, had no consorts, and was devoted to his wife. Genjiko was short, 3 years older than her husband, and dumpy from the four children she had already borne him. But she had a straight back, and all of her sister Ochiba's proud, ruthless protectiveness over her own brood, together with the same latent ferocity inherited from their grandfather, Gorada.
"Whoever accused my husband is a liar," she said.
"Mariko-san," Toranaga said, "ask the Lady Genjiko what your husband ordered you to say."
"My Lord Buntaro asked me, ordered me, to persuade you that the time had come for Lord Sudara to assume power, that others in the council shared my husband's opinion, that if our Lord Toranaga did not wish to give over power, it should be taken from him forcibly."
"Never has either of us entertained that thought, father," Sudara said. "We're loyal, and I would never con—" "If I gave you power, what would you do?"
Toranaga asked. Genjiko replied at once.
"How can Lord Sudara know when he has never considered such an unholy possibility? So sorry, sire, but it's not possible for him to answer, because that's never been in his mind. How could it be in his mind? And as to Buntaro-san, obviously the Kama have taken possession of him."
"Buntaro claimed that others share his opinion."
"Who?"
Sudara asked venomously.
"Tell me who, and they'll die within moments."
"You tell me who."
"I don't know any, sir, or I'd have reported it to you."
"You wouldn't have killed them first?"
"Your first law is to be patient. Your second is to be patient. I've always followed your orders. I would have waited and reported it. If I've offended you, order me to commit seppuku. I do not merit your anger, Lord. I've committed no treason. I cannot bear your anger washing over me."
The Lady Genjiko concurred.
"Yes, sir. Please excuse me, but I humbly agree with my husband. He is blameless, and so are all our people. We're faithful. Whatever we have is yours. Whatever we are, you've made. Whatever you order, we'll do."
"So, you're loyal vassals, are you? Obedient? You always obey orders?"
"Yes, sir."
"Good. Then go and put your children to death. Now."
Sudara took his eyes off his father and looked at his wife. Her head moved slightly, and she nodded her agreement. Sudara bowed to Toranaga. His hand tightened on his sword hilt, and he got up. He closed the door quietly behind him.
There was a great silence in his wake. Genjiko looked once at Mariko, then stared at the floor. Bells tolled the middle of the hour of the goat. The air in the room seemed to thicken. Rain stopped briefly, then began again, heavier than before. Just after the bells tolled the next hour, there was a knock.
Yes?
The door opened. Naga said,
Please excuse me, sir. My brother, Lord Sudara, wants to come up again.
Let him, then return to your post.
Sudara came in and knelt and bowed. He was soaking, his hair matted from the rain. His shoulders shook slightly.
My children are... You've already taken my children, sir.
Genjiko wavered and almost pitched forward. But she dominated her weakness and stared at her husband.
You didn't kill them?
Sudara shook his head, and Toranaga said grimly,
Your children are in my quarters, on the floor below. I ordered Chano-san to fetch them after you'd been ordered here. I needed to be sure of you both. Foul times require foul tests.
He rang the handbell.
You withdraw your order, sire?
Genjiko asked, desperately trying to maintain a cold dignity.
Yes, my order's withdrawn. This time, it was necessary to know you and my heir.
Thank you, sire.
Sudara lowered his head abjectly. The inner door opened.
Chano-san, bring my grandchildren here for a moment,
Toranaga said. Soon three somberly clad foster mothers and the wet nurse brought the children. The girls were 4, 3, and 2, and the infant son, a few weeks old, was asleep in the arms of his wet nurse. All the girls wore scarlet kimonos with scarlet ribbons in their hair. The foster mothers knelt and bowed to Toranaga, and their wards copied them importantly and put their heads to the tatamis, except the youngest girl, whose head needed assistance from a gentle though firm hand. Toranaga bowed back gravely. Then, their duty done, the children rushed into his embrace, except the littlest one, who toddled into her mother's arms. At midnight, Yabu strutted arrogantly across the flare-lit donjon forecourt. Toranaga's elite corps of personal guards were everywhere. The moon was vague and misted, and the stars barely visible.
Ah, Naga-san! What's the reason for all this?
I don't know, Lord, but everyone's ordered to the conference chamber. Please excuse me, but you must leave your swords with me.
Yabu flushed at this unheard-of breach of etiquette.
Are you?
He changed his mind, sensing the youth's chilling tenseness and the restless nervousness of the nearby guards.
On whose orders, please, Naga-san?
My father's, Lord.
So sorry. You can please yourself if you don't wish to go to the conference, but I have to advise you that you are ordered there without swords. And, so sorry, that is the way you will appear. Please excuse me, but I have no choice.
Yabu saw the pile of swords already in the lee of the guardhouse beside the huge main gate. He weighed the dangers of a refusal and found them formidable. Reluctantly, he relinquished his arms. Naga bowed politely, equally embarrassed as he accepted them. Yabu went inside. The huge room was embrasured, stone-floored, and wooden-beamed. Soon the 50 senior generals were gathered, 23 councillors and 7 friendly daimyos from minor northern provinces. All were keyed up and fidgeted uncomfortably.
What's all this about?
Yabu asked, as he sourly took his place.
A general shrugged.
It's probably about the trek to Osaka.
Another looked around, hopefully.
Perhaps it's a change of plan, eh? He's going to order Crimson. So sorry, but your head's in the clouds. He's decided. Our Lord's decided. It's Osaka and nothing else. Hey, Yabu-sama, when did you get here?
Yesterday. I've been stuck at a filthy little fishing village called Yokohama, for more than 2 weeks, south of here, with my troops. The port's fine, But the bugs! Stinking mosquitoes and bugs! They were never so bad in Izu.
You're up to date with all the news?
You mean all the bad news? The move's still in 6 days, ne?
Yes. Terrible. Shameful.
True, but tonight's worse,
another general said grimly.
I've never been without swords before. Never. It's an insult,
Yabu said deliberately.
All those nearby looked at him.
I agree,
General Kiyoshio replied, breaking the silence. Serata Kiyoshio was the grizzled, tough commander of the 7th Army.
I've never been without swords in public before. Makes me feel like a stinking merchant. I think... orders are orders, but some orders should not be given.
That's quite right, someone said.
What would old Iron Fist have done if he had been here?
He'd have slit his belly before he gave up his swords. He'd have done it tonight in the forecourt,
a young man said. He was Sarata Tomo, the general's eldest son, second in command of the 4th Army.
I wish Iron Fist were here. He could get sense. He'd have slit his belly first.
I considered it.
General Kiyosho cleared his throat harshly.
Someone has to be responsible and do his duty. Someone has to make the point that liege lord means responsibility and duty.
So sorry, but you'd better watch your tongue,
Yabu advised.
What's the use of a tongue in a samurai's mouth if he's forbidden to be samurai?
None,
Isamu, an old counselor, replied.
I agree. Better to be dead.
So sorry, Isamu-san, but that's our immediate future anyway,
the young Sarata Tomo said.
We're staked pigeons to a certain dishonored hawk.
Please hold your tongues,
Yabu said, hiding his own satisfaction. Then he added carefully,
he's our liege lord, and until Lord Sudara or the council takes open responsibility, he stays liege lord, and he is to be obeyed. Nay?
General Kiyoshio studied him, his hand unconsciously feeling for his sword hilt.
What have you heard, Yabu-sama?
Nothing. Buntaro-san said that...
The counselor began. General Kiyoshio interrupted thinly.
Please excuse me, Isama-san, but what General Buntaro said, or what he didn't say, is unimportant. What Yabu-sama says is true. A liege lord is a liege lord. Even so, a samurai has rights. A vassal has rights. Even daimyos, ne?
Yabu looked back at him, gauging the depth of that invitation.
Izu is Lord Toranaga's province. I'm no longer daimyo of Izu, only overlord for him.
He glanced around the huge room.
Everyone's here, ne?
Except Lord Noboru,
a general said, mentioning Toranaga's eldest son, who was universally loathed.
Yes, just as well. Never mind, General, the Chinese sickness'll finish him soon, and we'll be done with his foul humor forever.
Someone said.
And stench.
When's he coming back?
Who knows? We don't even know why Toranaga-sama sent him north. Better he stays there, ne? If you had that sickness, you'd be as foul-humored as he is, ne? Yes, Yabu-san. Yes, I would. Pity he's poxed. He's a good general. Better than the cold fish.
General Kiyoshio added, using Sudara's private nickname.
Eee!
The counselor whistled.
There are devils in the air tonight to make you so careless with your tongue. Or is it sake?
Perhaps it's the Chinese sickness,
General Kiyoshio replied with a bitter laugh.
Buddha protect me from that,
Yabu said.
If only Lord Toranaga would change his mind about Osaka.
I'd slit my belly now, if that had convinced him,
the young man said.
No offense, my son, but your head's in the clouds. He'll never change.
Yes, father, but I just don't understand him.
We're all to go with him, In the same contingent?
Yabu asked after a moment. Isamu, the old councillor, said,
Yes, we're to go as an escort, with 2,000 men, with full ceremonial equipment and trappings. It'll take us 30 days to get there. We've 6 days left.
General Kiyoshio said,
That's not much time, is it, Yabu-sama?
Yabu did not reply. There was no need. The general did not require an answer. They settled into their own thoughts. A side door opened. Torunaga came in. Sudara followed. Everyone bowed stiffly. Torunaga bowed back and sat facing them, Sudara as heir presumptive, slightly in front of him, also facing the others. Naga came in from the main door and closed it. Only Torunaga wore swords.
It's been reported that some of you speak treason, think treason, and plan treason,
he said coldly. No one answered or moved. Slowly, relentlessly, Torunaga looked from face to face. Still no movement. Then General Kiyoshio spoke.
May I respectfully ask, sire, what do you mean by treason? Any questioning of an order or a decision or a position of any liege lord at any time is treason.
Torunaga slammed back at him. The general's back stiffened.
Then I'm guilty of treason. Then go out and commit seppuku at once.
I will, sire,
the soldier said proudly.
But first I claim the right of free speech before your loyal vassals, officers, and camp. You've forfeited all rights. Very well, then I claim it as a dying wish, as Hatamoto, and in return for 28 years of faithful service. Make it very short.
I will, sire,
General Kiyoshio replied icily.
I beg to say, first, going to Osaka and bowing to the peasant Ishido is treason against your honor, the honor of your clan, the honor of your faithful vassals, your special heritage, and totally against Bushido. Second, I indict you for this treason, and say you've therefore forfeited your right to be our liege lord. Third, I petition that you immediately abdicate in Lord Sudara's favor and honorably depart this life, or shave your head and retire to a monastery, whichever you prefer.
The general bowed stiffly, then sat back on his haunches. Everyone waited, hardly breathing now that the unbelievable had become a reality. Abruptly, Torunaga hissed,
What are you waiting for?
General Kiyoshio stared back at him.
Nothing, sire. Please excuse me.
His son began to get up.
No, you're ordered to stay here, he said.
The general bowed a last time to Torunaga, got up, and walked out with immense dignity. Some stirred nervously, and a swell moved through the room, but Torunaga's harshness dominated again.
Is there anyone else who admits treason? Anyone else who dares to break Bushido? Anyone who dares to accuse his liege lord of treason?
Please excuse me, sire,
Osamu, the old councillor, said calmly.
But I regret to say that if you go to Osaka, it is treason against your heritage.
The day I go to Osaka, you will depart this earth.
The grey-haired man bowed politely.
Yes, sire.
Torunaga looked them over, pitilessly. Someone shifted uneasily and eyes snapped onto him. The samurai, a warrior who years ago had lost his wish to fight and had shaved his head to become a Buddhist monk and was now a member of Torunaga's civil administration, said nothing. Almost wilting with an untoward fear, he tried desperately to hide.
What are you afraid of? Numata-san?
Nothing, sire,
the man said, his eyes downcast.
Good. Then go and commit seppuku, because you're a liar, and your fear's an infectious stench.
The man whimpered and stumbled out. Dread stalked them all now. Torunaga watched and waited. The air became oppressive. The slight crackling of the torch flames seemed strangely loud. Then, knowing it was his duty and responsibility, Sudara turned and bowed.
Please, sir, may I respectfully make a statement?
What statement?
Sir, I believe there is no more treason here, and that there will be no more I don't share your opinion. Please excuse me, sir. You know I will obey you. We will all obey you. We seek only the best for your...
The best is my decision. What I decide is best.
Helplessly, Sudara bowed his acquiescence and became silent. Torunaga did not look away from him. His gaze was remorseless.
You are no longer my heir.
Sudara paled. Then Torunaga shattered the tension in the room.
I am liege lord here.
He waited a moment. Then, in utter silence, he got up and arrogantly marched out. The door closed behind him. A great sigh went through the room. Han sought sword hilts impotently. But no one left his place.
This morning I heard from our commander-in-chief, Sudara began at last. Lord Hiromatsu will be here in a few days. I will talk to him. Be silent. Be patient. Be loyal to our liege lord. Let us go and pay our respects to General Sarata Kiyoshio.
Torunaga was climbing the stairs, a great loneliness upon him, his footsteps reverberating in the emptiness of the tower. Near the top he stopped and leaned momentarily against the wall, his breathing heavy. The ache was gripping his chest again, and he tried to rub it away.
It's just lack of exercise, he muttered. That's all. Just lack of exercise.
He went on. He knew he was in great jeopardy. Treason and fear were contagious, and both had to be cauterized without pity the moment they appeared. Even then, you could never be sure they were eradicated. The struggle he was locked into was not a child's game. The weak had to be food for the strong pawns for the very strong. If Sudara publicly claimed his mantle, he was powerless to prevent it. Until Zataki answered, he had to wait. Torunaga shut and bolted his door and walked to a window. Below, he could see his generals and counselors silently streaming away to their homes outside the donjon walls. Beyond the castle walls, the city lay in almost total darkness. Above, the moon was pallid and misted. It was a brooding, darkling night. And, it seemed to him, doom walked the heavens. Chapter 50 Blackthorn was sitting alone in the morning sun in a corner of the garden outside his guest house, daydreaming, his dictionary in his hand. It was a fine cloudless day, the first for many weeks, and the fifth day since he had last seen Torunaga. All that time he had been confined to the castle, unable to see Mariko or visit his ship or crew, or explore the city, or go hunting or riding. Once a day he went swimming in one of the moats with other samurai, and to pass the time he taught some to swim and some to dive. But this did not make the waiting easier.
So sorry, Anjin-san, but it's the same for everyone.
Mariko had said yesterday, when he met her by chance in his section of the castle.
Even Lord Hiromatsu's been kept waiting. It's 2 days since he arrived, and he still hasn't seen Lord Torunaga. No one has.
But this is important, Mariko-chan. I thought he understood every day's vital. Isn't there some way I can get a message to him?
Oh yes, Anjin-san. That's simple. You just write. If you tell me what you want to say, I'll write it for you. Everyone has to write for an interview. Those are his present orders. Please be patient. That's all we can do.
Then please ask for an interview. I'd appreciate it.
That's no trouble. It's my pleasure.
Where have you been? It's 4 days since I saw you.
Please excuse me, but I've had to do so many things. It's a little difficult for me. So many preparations.
What's going on? This whole castle's been like a hive, about to swarm for almost a week now.
Oh, so sorry. Everything's fine, Anjin-san.
Is it? So sorry. A general and a senior administrator commit seppuku in the donjon forecourt. That's usual. Lord Toranaga locks himself away in the ivory tower, keeping people waiting without apparent reason. That's also usual. What about Lord Hiromatsu?
Lord Toranaga is our lord. Whatever he does is right.
And you, Mariko-san? Why haven't I seen you?
Please excuse me. So sorry. But Lord Toranaga ordered me to leave you to your studies. I'm visiting your consort now, Anjin-san. I'm not supposed to visit you.
Why should he object to that?
Merely, I suppose, so that you are obliged to speak our tongue. It's only been a few days, ne?
When are you leaving for Osaka?
I don't know. I expected to go there 3 days ago, but Lord Toranaga hasn't signed my pass yet. I've arranged everything, porters and horses, and daily I submit my travel papers to his secretary for signing, but they're always sent back. Submit them tomorrow.
I thought I was going to take you to Osaka by sea. Didn't he say I was to take you by sea?
Yes. Yes, he did, but... Well, Anjin-san, you never know with our liege lord. He changes plans.
Has he always been like that?
Yes and no. Since Yokose, he's been filled with... How do you say it? Melancholy, ne? Yes, melancholy, and very different. He... Yes, he's different now.
Since First Bridge, you've been filled with melancholy, and very different. Yes, you're different now.
First Bridge was an end and a beginning, Anjin-san. And our promise. Eh?
Yes. Please excuse me.
She had bowed sadly and left, and then, once safely away, not turning back, she had whispered,
Thou!
The word lingered in the corridor with her perfume. At the evening meal, he had tried to question Hujiko. But she also knew nothing of importance, or would not, or could not, explain what was amiss at the castle.
Dozo gomen nasai, Anjin-san.
He went to bed seething. Seething with frustration over the delays, and the nights without Mariko. It was always bad knowing she was so near, that Buntaro was gone from the city. And now because of the... that her desire was still as intense as his. A few days ago, he had gone to her house on the pretext that he needed help with Japanese. The samurai guard had told him, so sorry, she was not at home. He had thanked them, then wandered listlessly to the main south gate. He could see the ocean. Because the land was so flat, he could see nothing of the wharves or docks, though he thought he could distinguish the tall mast of his ship in the distance. The ocean beckoned him. It was the horizon more than the deep, the need for a fair wind washing him, eyes squinting against its strength, tongue tasting its salt. The deck heeled over, and aloft the spars and rigging and halyards creaking and groaning under the press of sails, that from time to time would cackle with glee as the stalwart breeze shifted a point or two. And it was freedom more than the horizon. Freedom to go to any quarter, in any weather, at any whim. To stand on his quarterdeck and to be arbiter, as here Toranaga alone was arbiter. Blackthorn looked up at the topmost part of the donjon. Sun glinted off its shapely tiled curves. He had never seen movement there, though he knew that every window below the topmost floor was guarded. Gong sounded the hour change. For the first time, his mind told him this was the middle of the hour of the horse, and not eight bells of this watch. High noon. He put his dictionary into his sleeve, glad that it was time for the first real meal. Today it was rice and quick-broiled prawns and fish soup and pickled vegetables.
Would you like some more, Anjin-san?
Thank you, Hujiko. Yes. Rice, please. And some fish. Good. Very.
He looked up the word for delicious and said it several times to memorize it.
Yes. Delicious, ne?
Hujiko was pleased.
Thank you. This fish from north. water colder north. Understand? Its name is Kuruma Ebi.
He repeated the name and put it into his memory. When he had finished and their trays were taken away, she poured more cha and took a package out of her sleeve.
Here, money, Anjin-san.
She showed him the gold coins.
50 koban, worth 150 koku. You want it, ne? For sailors? Please excuse me. Do you understand?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. Enough?
Yes, think so. Where get?
Toranaga-sama's chief.
Ujiko sought a simple way to say it.
I go important Toranaga man. Head man. Like Mura, ne? Not samurai, only money man. Sign my name for you.
Ah, understand. Thank you. My money? My koku?
Oh, yes.
This house, food, servants. Who pay?
Oh, I pay from your... from koku 1 year.
Is that enough, please? Enough koku?
Oh, yes. Yes, I believe so,
she said.
Why worry?
Worry in face?
Oh, please excuse me, Anjin-san. I'm not worried. No worry.
Pain? Burn pain?
No pain. See?
Fujiko carefully got off the thick cushions he insisted she use. She knelt directly onto the tatamis, with no sign of discomfort, then sat back on her heels and settled herself.
There! All better!
Eee! Very good,
he said, pleased for her.
Show, eh?
She got up carefully and lifted the hem of her skirts, and allowed him to look at the backs of her legs. The scar tissue had not split, and there were no suppurations.
Very good, he said. Yes, soon like baby skin, eh?
Thank you, yes. Soft. Thank you, Anjin-san.
He noticed the slight change in her voice, but did not comment. That night, he did not dismiss her. The pillowing was satisfactory. No more. For him, there was no afterglow, no joyous lassitude. It was just a mating.
So wrong, he thought. Yet not wrong, eh?
Before she left him, she knelt and bowed again to him, and put her hands on his forehead.
I thank you with all my heart. Please sleep now, Anjin-san.
Thank you, Ujiko-san. I sleep later.
Please sleep now. It is my duty, and would give me great pleasure.
The touch of her hand was warm and dry, and not pleasing. Nonetheless, he pretended to sleep. She caressed him ineptly, though with great patience. Then, quietly, she went back to her own room. Now alone again, glad to be alone, Blackthorn propped his head on his arms and looked up into the darkness. He had decided about Ujiko during the journey from Yokose to Edo.
It is your duty,
Mariko had told him, lying in his arms.
I think that'd be a mistake, ne? If she gets with child, well, it'll take me 4 years to sail home and come back again. And in that time, God knows what could happen.
He remembered how Mariko had trembled then.
Oh, Anjin-san, that is very much time.
3, then. But you'll be aboard with me. I'll take you back with...
I promise, my darling, nothing that is, eh?
Thou art right. Yes. But with Ujiko, so many bad things could happen. I don't think she would want my child.
You do not know that. I do not understand you, Anjin-san. It is your duty. She could always prevent a child, ne? Don't forget, she is your consort. In truth, you take away her face if you don't invite her to the pillow. After all, Toranaga himself ordered her into your house.
Why did he do that?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. He ordered it, therefore it is the best for you and best for her. It has been good, ne? She's done her duty as best she can, ne? Please excuse me, but don't you think you should do yours?
Enough of your lectures. Love me, and do not talk any more.
How should I love thee? Ah, like Kiku-san told me today.
How is that?
Like this.
That is very good. So very good.
Oh, I forgot. Please light the lamp, Anjin-san. I have something to show thee.
Later. Now I...
Oh, please excuse me. It should be now. I bought it for you. It's a pillow book. The pictures are very funny.
I don't want to look at a pillow book now.
But so sorry, Anjin-san. Perhaps one of the pictures would excite you. How can you learn about pillowing without a pillow book?
I'm excited already.
But Kiku-san said it's a very best way of choosing positions. There are 47. Some of them look astonishing and very difficult. But she said it was important to try all. Why do you laugh?
You're laughing. Why shouldn't I laugh too?
But I was laughing because you were chuckling and I felt your stomach shaking and you won't let me up. Please let me up. Anjin-san.
Ah, but you can't be cross, Mariko, my darling. There's no woman in the world who can be really even a little cross like this.
But Anjin-san, please, you must let me up. I want to show you.
All right. If that...
Oh, no, Anjin-san. I didn't want... You mustn't. Can't you just reach out? Please. Not yet. Oh, please don't leave me. Oh, how I love thee like this.
Blackthorn remembered that loving. Mariko excited him more than Kiku had, and Hujiko was nothing compared to either. And Felicity?
Ah, Felicity, he thought, focusing on his great problem. I must be mad to love Mariko and Kiku. And yet, the truth about Felicity is that now she can't compare even with Hujiko. Hujiko was clean. Poor Felicity. I'll never be able to tell her, but the memory of her and me rotting like a pair of stoats in the hay or under rancid covers makes my skin crawl now. Now I know better. Now I could teach her, but would she wish to learn? And how could we ever get clean and stay clean and live clean? Home is filth piled on filth. But that's where my wife is, and where my children are, and where I belong.
Don't think about that home, Anjin-san,
Mariko had once said when the dark mists were on him.
Real home is here. The others 10 million times 10 million sticks away. Here is reality. You'll send yourself mad if you try to get Wa out of such impossibilities. Listen. If you want peace, you must learn to drink cha from an empty cup.
She had shown him how.
You think reality into the cup. You think the cha there, the warm, pale green drink of the gods. If you concentrate hard. Oh, a Zen teacher could show you, Anjin-san. It is most difficult, but so easy. How I wish I was clever enough to show it to you. For then all things in the world can be yours for the asking. Even the most unobtainable gift. Perfect tranquility.
He had tried many times, but he could never sip the drink when it wasn't there.
Never mind, Anjin-san. It takes such a long time to learn, but you will. Sometime.
Can you?
Rarely. Only in moments of great sadness or loneliness. But the taste of the unreal cha seems to give a meaning to life. It is hard to explain. I've done it once or twice. Sometimes you gain Wa just by trying.
Now, lying in the dark of the castle, sleep so far away, he lit the candle with the flint and concentrated on the little porcelain cup that Mariko had given him, which now he always kept beside his bed. For an hour he tried, but he could not purify his mind. Inevitably, the same thoughts kept chasing each other.
I want to leave. I want to stay. I'm afraid of going back. I'm afraid to remain. I hate both and want both. And then there are the Etters. If it was up to me alone, I wouldn't leave. Not yet. But others are involved, and they're not Etta's, and I signed on as pilot. By the Lord God, I promise to take the fleet out, and through the grace of God, bring her home again. I want Mariko. I want to see the land Torunaga's given me, and I need to stay here to enjoy the fruit of my great luck for just a little longer. Yes, but also duties involved, and that transcends everything, eh?
With the dawn, Blackthorn knew that though he pretended he had put off the decision again, in reality, he had decided. Irrevocably.
God help me. First and last, I'm pilot.
Torunaga uncurled the tiny slip of paper that arrived 2 hours after dawn. The message from his mother said simply,
"Your brother agrees, my son. His letter of confirmation will leave today by hand. The state visit of Lord Sudara and his family must begin within 10 days.
Torunaga sat down weakly. The pigeons fluttered in their roosts, then settled back once more. Morning sun filtered into the loft pleasingly, though rain clouds were building. Gathering his strength, he hurried down the steps into his quarters below to begin.
Naga-san!
Yes, father.
Send Hiromatsu-san here. After him, my secretary.
Yes, father.
The old general came quickly. His joints were creaking from the climb, and he bowed low, his sword loose in his hands as ever, his face fiercer than ever, older than ever, and even more resolute.
You're welcome, old friend.
Thank you, Lord.
Hiromatsu looked up.
I'm saddened to see the cares of the world are in your face, and I'm saddened to see and hear so much treason. Yes, treason is a terrible thing.
Torunaga saw the firm old eyes measuring him.
You can speak freely. Have you ever known me not to, sire?
The old man was grave.
Please excuse me for keeping you waiting.
Please excuse me for troubling you. What is your pleasure, sire? Please give me your decision about the future of your house. Is it finally Osaka, bending to that manure pile?
Have you ever known me to make a final decision about anything?
Hiromatsu frowned, then thoughtfully straightened his back to ease the ache in his shoulders.
I've always known you to be patient and decisive, and you've always won. That's why I can't understand you now. It's not like you to give up.
Isn't the realm more important than my future?
No.
Ishido and the other regents are still legal rulers, according to the Daiko's will.
I am the vassal of Yushi Torunaga no Minowara, and I acknowledge no one else.
Good. The day after tomorrow is my chosen day to leave for Osaka.
Yes, I've heard that.
You'll be in command of the escort, Buntaro's second in command.
The old general sighed.
I know that too, sire. But since I've been back, sire, I've talked to your senior advisers and general...
Yes, I know. And what is their opinion?
That you should not leave Edo. That your orders should be temporarily overruled.
By whom?
By me. By my orders.
That's what they wish? Or that is what you've decided?
Hiromatsu put his sword on the floor, nearer to Torunaga, and now defenseless, looked directly at him.
Please excuse me, sire. I wish to ask you what I should do. My duty seems to tell me I should take command and prevent your leaving. This will at once force Ishido to come against us. Yes, of course we will lose, but that seems to be the only honorable way.
But stupid, eh?
The general's iron-grey brows knotted.
No, we die in battle, with honor. We regain Wa. The Kanto is a spoil of war, but we'll not see the new master in this life. Shigataganai.
I've never enjoyed expending men uselessly. I've never lost a battle, and see no reason why I should begin now.
Losing one battle is no dishonor, sire. Is surrender honorable?
You are all agreed in this treason?
Sire, please.
Please excuse me. I asked individuals for a military opinion only. There's no treaty.